Time is 1:35, and I'd like to call this meeting of the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee to order. We are in Belt's Room 105, the Thomas Stewart Building, in the nation's most beautiful capital city of Juneau, Alaska. Today is Wednesday, April 19th, 2023. Members present are Senator Gray Jackson, Senator Dunbar, and myself, Senator Bjork. Let the record reflect that we have a quorum to conduct business. Please turn off or silence your cell phones. I would like to recognize and welcome our recording secretary, Juliana Singh, and our LAO moderator, Sydney Truitt. Today we have three items on our agenda. First up, Senate Bill 45, Direct Healthcare Agreement, Not Insurance. Senate Bill 85, Permanent Fund Employment Eligibility. And Senate Bill 126, Architect Engineer Registration Board. First up, Senate Bill 45. This is the third hearing on the bill. We first heard this bill on March 27th when we had an introduction of the bill and a follow-up meeting on April 5 when we took public testimony. Here to present a brief recap of the bill, we have staff to the Honorable Senator David Wilson, Jasmine Martin. Ms. Martin, could you please join us at the table, state your name and affiliation for the record, and begin your recap of the bill.
For the record, this is Jasmine Martin, staff to Senator Wilson. This bill would allow healthcare providers and their patients to enter into direct healthcare agreements and would clarify that these do not lie within our insurance bounds.
Thank you very much, ma'am. Are there questions from members of the committee for Ms. Martin? Seeing and hearing none. Members have a draft proposed committee substitute for Senate Bill 45 and three amendments in their packets. Senator Gray Jackson, may I have a motion, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I move CS Senate Bill 45, Work Order 33-LS0211/R as the working document. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I'll object for an explanation. My staff, Conrad Jackson, will explain the changes made by this committee substitute.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Conrad Jackson, staff to Senator Bjorkman and the Labor and Commerce Committee. The draft CS you have before you, /R, really only makes about three changes to the legislation, but I'll begin at the first page and just walk members through. First changes in the title on page one, inserts relating to the duties of the director of the Division of Insurance in the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development. It also adds a line on line four of the new CS, providing for an effective date. Further down the bill, you will see the next change, which is the addition of language on regarding healthcare services provided under a direct healthcare agreement would be care provided by a primary care provider to that patient. There's additional language farther back that specifies the definition that relates to the primary care physician. Farther back in the bill, you will see the next change beginning on page four. Sorry, I'm flipping back and forth between. Sorry, we have one deletion. Page four of CSU, we're deleting a line starting on line 19, starting with the word and, deleting all material down to line 22 at the period following title. What that's doing is removing the regulation, the portion of the bill rather, that would exempt this by regulation of the Department of, or the Division of Insurance. The next change is the insertion dealing with actually putting this very clearly under the director of the Division of Insurance. It also includes language that would provide for penalties. Farther down on that page, in towards the end of section one, is language that requires that physicians licensed under 0864 who have established residency in the state, so that doctors who are physicians who enter into these healthcare arrangements would have to be established residency in the state. The following page, paragraph 10, inserts the language defining a primary care provider, has a meaning given in AS 2107250. On the last page of the bill, there are three new sections. One's transition language, which allows the director of the Division of Insurance to begin drafting regulations and moving forward. Section 5 and 6 are effective date clauses.
Thank you very much, Mr. Jackson. Are there any questions for Mr. Jackson? Seeing and hearing none, are there further objections?
Mr. Chairman, is this an appropriate time to make an amendment, a motion for an amendment?
In a minute. We'll be able to do further amendments after we adopt the CS.
Oh, I thought we already had. All right, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yep. Seeing and hearing no further objection, CSSB 45 version /R is before the committee as the working document. Senator Dunbar, you have submitted three amendments. Since these are drafted to version U, the committee will consider them conceptual, and should they pass, we will grant Ledge Legal the authority to make conforming changes to fit them into the CS working document. Please go ahead with your motion on amendment number one.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move Dunbar amendment one, labeled U.1 in your packet.
Very good. I will object for purpose of explanation.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This amendment deletes the reference to subsection G. In the U version, it was page 3, line 29. I believe in this version it is page 4, line 2. And what this does at the moment, a healthcare provider or healthcare business may charge a termination fee under either subsection C or subsection G of this bill. Subsection C is the portion that relates to the initial period when the contract is established, and that would remain. But further termination fees would be prevented. And I believe this is an important consumer protection action to allow consumers to terminate these agreements without penalty if they realize that that it's not working for them. When we heard the invited testimony, they justified this termination fee with the administrative costs of setting up these programs. And that's why I have left subsection C here to cover their potential administrative costs. And that's all, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Thank you very much, Senator Dunbar. I will remove my objection to Dunbar Amendment 1. Is there further objection? Seeing none, Amendment Number 1, labeled U.1, is adopted. Senator Dunbar.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do not intend to move Amendment 2, which is actually labeled U.5 in your packet, but rather I will move Third Amendment, labeled U.6, Dunbar Amendment. I will move that amendment.
Object for purposes of explanation.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This inserts a new subsection, which would read, the amount of the periodic fee may not be based solely on the patient's health status or sex. And this is, I think, pretty straightforward. It's primarily to prevent gender discrimination in these fees. And then the remainder part of the amendment is conforming.
I'll remove my objection. Is there further objection?
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Senator
Thank
Gray
you.
Jackson.
Not objection by no means, but I just need clarification. And if I can speak to the amendment, I would appreciate it, Mr. Chairman.
Absolutely.
Thank you. So Senator Dunbar said it. The amendment is being made so that it doesn't discriminate against sex, but also it says health status, too. So is it health status and sex?
Yes, Senator Jackson.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
You're welcome.
And I should have clarified, too. In our version, it was page 2, line 24. I believe in this version, it is still page 2, line 23. But I guess we can leave it up to Ledge Legal to figure that out specifically.
Thank you very much, Senator Dunbar. I remove my objection. Is there further objection? Seeing none, amendment number 3 labeled U.6 is adopted. Is there further committee discussion? What are the wishes of the committee?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move to report CS Senate Bill 45, work order number 33-LS0211/R as amended from the committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note. Mr. Chairman, I further move that we grant Ledge Legal authorization to make conforming changes to the amendments we have adopted to the current CS. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Is there objection? Seeing and hearing none, committee substitute for Senate Bill 45 as amended with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes moves from committee. We'll take a brief at ease while we sign the paperwork and set up for the next bill. We're back on the record, 150 here at the Thomas Stewart Office Building. That's room 105. Next up, Senate Bill 85. This is the second hearing on this bill. First, we heard Senate Bill 85 on April 5th when we had a presentation on the bill and took a limited amount of public testimony. It is my intention today to finish public testimony and look to the will of the committee regarding an amendment. Here to give a brief recap of Senate Bill 85, we have the PFD Operations Manager, Corey Bigelow. Mr. Bigelow, thank you for joining us at the table today, right here in Senate Labor and Commerce. Welcome. Please state your name and affiliation for the record and begin your recap of the bill.
Thank you, Committee Chair Bjorkman. For the record, my name is Corey Bigelow, Operations Manager for the PFD Division. SB 85 aims to do four things. First section looks to add statutory authority for the PFT division to conduct background checks on its employees, and provides also statutory authority for Department of Public Safety to conduct those background checks for us. Second section would allow merchant mariners attending qualified vocational programs to qualify for an allowable absence. In essence, this provides language that allows those training to become merchant mariners to be able to claim the same allowable absence as those who are currently merchant mariners. The next section adds a new subsection to AS 4323.008 to define the term education on a full-time basis for the purpose of calculating allowable absences. This is so students aren't potentially penalized for based on differences in academic schedules. And lastly, amends AS 4323.140 to allow the division the use of electronic notice of levy. Current state statute says that the division has to notify levy individuals by the address that they have on record, and this means that we have to mail them. This would simply provide the option to provide electronic notice. This would allow us to provide notices more quickly and potentially save on postage and printing. And that is the bill.
Thank you very much, Mr. Bigelow. Are there questions from members of the committee? Seeing no one at this time, I will open public testimony on Senate Bill 85. Is there anyone in the room that would like to testify to Senate Bill 85? Is there anyone online that would like to testify to Senate Bill 85? Seeing none at this time, I will close public testimony. Members have an amendment to Senate Bill 85 in their packet. Senator Gray Jackson may have a motion, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move Amendment A1 to Senate Bill 85. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Gray Jackson. My staff, Conrad Jackson, will give us a brief explanation of the amendment. Mr. Jackson, thank you very much for joining us at the table. Please state your name and affiliation for the record and explain this amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Conrad Jackson, staff to Senator Bjorkman and the committee. Amendment A.1 makes a slight insertion in the bill on page 6, on line 1, following the word subsection, which adds the language II, which says under 5 of this subsection, if the individual not claiming an absence under 1 through 4 or 6 through 16 of this subsection. Mr. Chairman, well, it doesn't use any of those words. It references some subsections that would, barring any other reason for being denied a permanent fund dividend qualification, a person may be absent up to now, with this amendment, 180 days from the state of Alaska. There are further statutes and regulations regarding that a particular medical absence, but this would extend from 45 days to 180 days.
Thank you, Mr. Jackson. Are there questions from members of the committee? I have a clarifying question. Under current law, someone can be gone for any reason for up to 180 days and still receive their permanent fund dividend, correct?
Mr. Chairman, Conrad Jackson, staff chief, Senator Bjorkman, I would not say that's completely accurate, because when you say any reason, I think that's maybe a bit of a stretch, but okay. My recommendation would be to have Mr. Bigelow respond to that, who's much more familiar with the intricacies of the regulations and statutes regarding dividend qualification.
Thank you. For the record, Corey Bigelow, PFD Operations Manager. I have a lifeline online, and Kim Lane is our eligibility manager, and I believe she could explain that much more clearly than I could.
Thank you, Mr. Bigelow. Ms. Lane, if you could state your name and affiliation for the record, and if you could answer that question.
Yes. Kimberly Lane, eligibility manager for PFD. Yes, an applicant can be absent up to 180 days allowably, except for it depends if they are out for vacation versus they moved from the state or are taking an action outside the state. So generally, yes, they can be out for up to 180 days.
Thank you for that explanation. And under current law, if folks are out of the state for purposes of medical treatment, the current limit for purposes of medical treatment is 45 days.
Kimberly Lane, through the chair. They can be, the allowable absence is verified, and that can be for as many days as necessary. It's the cumulative absence in addition to the medical absence that is 45 days. So if they're gone, let's say 100 days for medical, receiving continuous medical treatment, and then they're on a vacation sometime through the year for 50 days, that would exceed the 45 days in addition. But as far as the medical treatment, that would all be considered allowably absent. It's the time in addition.
Okay. Senator Gray Jackson has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So just for clarification, because I think this is what you said. So if they're out on medical leave for 45 days, and then after the medical leave ends, and then they decide to take a vacation right after, and it's 50 days, that still qualifies for the PFD?
45 days and 50 days, it'd still be less than 180. So yes, they would qualify. Once it's over 180 days, they have to be out for allowable reasons. So whatever portion they're receiving continuous medical treatment would be considered allowable. What the total cumulative of the total absences, we would remove the allowable portion and see what's left over. So if they were gone all year round, whatever portion they say is for continuous medical treatment, we would verify. It's the amount that's in addition to that that would have to be less than 45 days or less to be allowable currently.
May I follow up, Mr. Chairman?
You may.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm still a little bit confused, but maybe we can talk offline. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman, if I could maybe draw a scenario slightly reversed from what Senator Gray Jackson had portrayed. If, for instance, a resident who would normally qualify goes on vacation for 50 days, some length of time that is totally allowable, has no medical problems, they return to the state and life strikes, and they suddenly have to go outside. But they've been gone for more than 45 days. As we understand it, they are now disqualified. And as we understand it, this amendment would address that type of situation.
Thank you, Mr. Jackson.
Are there other questions from members of the committee? Senator Dunbar.
I think I understand what Mr. Jackson just said, and so it seems like something worth doing, but I guess I'm a little confused by the statements made by the member from the representative of the PFD division. Is the administration's position that this amendment would make an actual change, or is it that this is what the law currently is? I'm sorry, I didn't catch her name.
Kimberly Lane.
Ms. Lane, did you hear my question?
Yes, I did. Thank you. It's not changing the allowable absence. It's changing. It would change. This amendment would change how much time an individual can be absent in addition to the continuous medical treatment.
Okay, so it does make a meaningful change then that increases the number of allowable absent days.
It doesn't change the allowable absence period. It's the amount of time that they spent out in addition to the allowable absence.
Okay. Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator Dunlap. Other questions from members of the committee? Seeing none, is there further objection? Certainly not under objection, but just by way of further clarification. And Ms. Lane or Mr. Bigelow, feel free to further clarify what I am trying to just speak to what I heard and understand about this amendment. So what this amendment allows to have happen is for a person to have an excused medical absence and that time over and above the 180 days that is currently allowable. Is that correct?
Would you repeat that?
I'm sorry, can you repeat that?
Sure. So with this amendment, it would allow for there to be a 45-day absence on top of the 180-day absence that is currently allowable.
It is extending how much time in addition they can be out of the state.
Very good. Mr. Bigelow, you look very pensive, sir.
I apologize. It's a very difficult concept to explain. And as Ms. Lane is saying, this is referring to the days in addition to the allowable absence. So as Mr. Jackson commented a minute ago, this would speak to a situation where an individual perchance went out on a vacation that was longer than the current allowable absence in addition to. But then when they came back, then something happened and they were required to go out to get medical treatment. This would allow them to, that would extend that initial 45 days that they had, would increase that to 180 days. So that's the in addition to it would add to, if that makes sense.
Sure. Okay. Thank you. All right. Seeing no further objection to this amendment, the amendment is adopted. Is there committee discussion on the underlying bill?
I just haven't thought about the amendment, but I think it's fine.
Well, Senator Dunbar?
Yeah, can I ask a question? So you're using allowable absence as kind of a term of art here, because obviously if people were on vacation and it didn't obviate their eligibility for the PFD, then it was allowed, even though if you don't call it an allowable absence period, right? So let's say someone did go on vacation for 180 days and didn't have a medical emergency, would they still qualify for the PFD?
Under current language, Senator Dunbar, if they are out of the state for 180 days at the maximum, and that for any reason, then they still qualify for a PFD.
Okay, excellent. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator Dunbar. Further committee discussion. Senator Gray Jackson, may I have a motion?
Certainly, Mr. Chairman. I move to report Senate Bill 85, Work Order 33, GS-1337/A as amendment from the committee with individual recommendations and attach fiscal note. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Gray Jackson. Seeing no objection, Senate Bill 85 as amended moves from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note. We'll take a brief at ease while we sign the paperwork and then set up for the next bill. Back on the record, 207. Next up in front of Senate Labor and Commerce today is Senate Bill 126, Architects, Engineers, Registration Board. We first heard this bill last week when we had an introduction of the bill and took invited testimony and open public testimony. Today we have my staff, Laura Ashe, for a recap of the bill. Ms. Ashe, please state your name for the record and your affiliation. Begin your recap of the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Laura Ashe. I work for Senator Jesse Bjorkman, Senate District D. SB 126 makes amendments to the statutes that govern the Board of Architects, Engineers, and Land Surveyors. There's a couple meatier items that resolve some lack of clarity between interpretations of the Department of Law and the board regarding what their statutes mean. But then the rest of the bill is primarily cleanup, updating statutes to the 21st century and incorporating newer industry terminology for various aspects of the professions that are governed under the bill. So very straightforward. In the words of board member Lauren Lehman, who's online, I believe, for questions, it's essentially a revisor's bill.
Thank you, Laura. Are there questions from members of the committee? And just a reminder to committee members, we do have a number of folks that are available for questions. Seeing no questions, at this time I will reopen public testimony on Senate Bill 126. Is there anyone in the room to testify on Senate Bill 126? Is there anyone online that would like to testify to Senate Bill 126? Seeing no one, I will close public testimony. Is there any committee discussion on the underlying bill? Seeing none, what are the wishes of the committee?
Mr. Chairman, I move to report Senate Bill 126, work order number 33-LS0367-A. From the committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Gray Jackson. Is there any objection? Brief at ease. Back on the record. Senator Gray Jackson, could you please restate that motion?
Certainly, Mr. Chairman. I move to report Senate Bill 126, work order number 33-LS0367-R from the committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Gray Jackson. Is there any objection? Seeing none, Senate Bill 126 moved from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note. There's no other business before the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee today. The Senate Labor and Commerce Committee will meet again on Friday, April 21st. We will take up Senate Bill 89, Senate Bill 123, and Senate Bill 73. As there is no further business to come before the committee, we are adjourned at 2:12 p.m.